Last week, if you were here, we talked about Hades. And this is part two of that study. I don't want to go back and really rehash any of what we looked at, but the study is based on Acts chapter 2. Jesus went to the Hadean realm after he died. Luke 23, verse 43 tells us that he identified that area of Hades where he went as paradise. And last week, if you were here, we used a collection plate to try to illustrate Hades. Got some feedback after class, which I thought was helpful, and I'll tie that in today as well. When we think about Hades, I do want to look at this from a number of different perspectives, and with the two classes, you'll probably have about as much information as you can find in the Bible about Hades. Let's get three helpers lined up. I want to start with 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 19, and then we'll take a look at a passage from the book of Job, Job 17, verse 6, and then Revelation chapter 1, verse 18. 1 Peter 3, verse 19. Who wants to head there and read that in just a minute? 1 Peter 3, verse 19. All right, Steve, then we'll take a look at the book of Job, Job 17, verse 16. I said last week I'd offer you a handout. That has been completed, so after the class I'll give you a handout and it'll have all these references. Job 17, verse 16, that'll be Carol. And then Revelation chapter 1, verse 18, we also need that one read. Revelation 1, verse 18. All right, Lois, thank you very much. Let's start with 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 19. I do not want to, for the sake of today's class, discuss what this passage means. I simply want to extract a fact from it. 1 Peter 3:19.
By whom he also went and preached the spirits in prison.
Now that's an interesting passage. The spirits, that would be the eternal part of man, they are described as the spirits where? In prison. So when we think about the Hadean realm, at least from a negative standpoint, you have the word prison associated with that. And that's a very interesting word, a very interesting idea. Especially when we take that fact and we start coupling it with some other verses. The second being from the book of Job, Job 17, verse 16. Now, before we read that, if you think about a prison, at least for us, what's it have?
Bars.
Bars. Well, let's see what we find in Job 17, verse 16.
Will it go down with me to Sheol? Shall we together go down into the dust?
That's interesting. No reference to bars there?
No. It's a New American State.
All right. Well, let's see if we've got a different translation. I'm going to pull up the ASV. 17:16. I don't know why it didn't say bars. It shall go down to the bars of Sheol. So I'm not sure why the NASB didn't use the word bars. Is there a footnote there, maybe?
Okay. Okay.
Well, let's pull out the New King James and see what we've got there.
ESB says
bars. Does it? Okay. All right, it says gates in the New King James translation, 17:16. So the bars, the gates of Sheol. Offhand, I'm not sure why the New American Standard.
I have a different version I can pronounce. Leftist Bible.
Okay.
They shall go down to the bars of the pit when our rest together is in the dust.
Okay, thank you. So even very early back there in the book of Job, remember last week we talked about the fact that Hades, New Testament, is equivalent to what in the Old Testament? Sheol. Sheol, Hades, same place. So here in the book of Job, Hades is looked at as having gates or bars. Well, isn't that what Jesus said in Matthew 16, verse 18? I will build my church and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. Well, he was saying the same thing that Job had said many, many years earlier. And then coupled with these verses, we have our third passage. This is Revelation chapter 1, verse 18. Isn't that interesting? You have Hades pictured as a prison, and not only as a prison, but a prison with bars, gates, that kind of imagery. And Jesus comes along and says, I've got the what? The key. I can unlock the Hadean realm. And he's going to do that at the end of time. When the resurrection occurs, the bodies, the Hadean realm is going to surrender, all the eternal spirits are in it, and they're going to give it up. Now, here, let's go back and tie in a little bit what I said about last week. Remember? I'm not sure what happened to our whiteboard. I had intended to have a whiteboard up this morning, but I'm not quite sure where it is. We just did a quick search of the building. But our collection plate, remember how we put a line through that? And I think that's probably the easiest way, the simplest way to represent the Hadean realm. Just draw a circle, draw a line through it. This is Hades. One side is positive, one side. Remember, Hades is not heaven. Hades is not hell. Hades is not purgatory. Hades is just a holding place for people when they die. And there are two sections. There's a section for the righteous, there's a section for the unrighteous. After class last week, thankfully, somebody came to me and said, I have looked at Hades a little differently. And this is why I wish I had the whiteboard this morning. Someone said, I wish that I, well, let's just use our little board up here. It's not round, but somebody said, I wish, they didn't say, I wish I could explain it this way in class, but I think that was the sentiment. But let's take a look at this and imagine that this is a circle. And on a circle, we've got different layers, just like on that board. That is an alternative way to consider Hades. And as I thought about that a little bit over the past week, this dawned on me. Remember back to some of your science courses? We studied about the Earth a little bit in science, I think, didn't we? And you know, we've got, when you look at the Earth, we've got four basic parts. What part do we stand on, the outer part? The crust of the Earth. And if we go to the opposite extreme, we've got a core. There's the inner core. So you have, if you will, and again, I wish I had the board this morning, but I don't. So we're going to have to use this sort of board. But let's take a look at this. Let's think of this as the Earth. We've got the inner core, and what's it like in there? All right. You know, you're hotter than the sun. You're 10 to 12,000 degrees, something like that. And then with the outer core, we've got next to that the inner core. And then after that, we've got the mantle. Remember? The mantle of the Earth. And then we've got the crust. So we're on the cross. Now, that to me is very interesting when you think about Luke chapter 16. Remember the rich man and Lazarus? Where did they live before they died? On the earth, on the crust of the earth. What happens to that rich man? He goes into the Hadean realm. Unpleasant there? I am in anguish in what? This flame. Abraham says, here we are. And you can't get from here to here because there's what? There's a great barrier. So when you think about the basic breakdown of the earth, it lines up perfectly with Luke chapter 16. Now, do the two necessarily go together? I can't prove that. But I can at least point out that you do have those four sections, if you will, described in Luke chapter 16, and that is absolutely consistent with what we find in Jesus' account of the rich man and Lazarus. So for the person that brought that up last week, thank you very, very much. I'm grateful for that. And I kind of want to develop that a little bit. And again, I don't make this a doctrinal test. I could be very wrong on this. But when you start looking at all the passages that we gave out last week, and these will be on the handout today, as far as Hades being in the earth, Jesus said the Son of Man's going to go into the heart of the earth, Matthew 12, 39 and 40, and some other passages. Let's take a look at some other verses which really make you kind of sit back and wonder a little bit. Let's get about four or five helpers lined up here. Revelation chapter 20, verse 13. We're going to need that one next. And you'll have time to get there. Revelation 20, verse 13. Glenda. After that, we want to take a look at Philippians 2:10. Philippians 2:10. Betty? Then we'll turn over to Revelation chapter 5, verse 3. Revelation 5, verse 3. Dolores, or let's see, Gary, 5:3 in Revelation. And then we want to go back to the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 32:22. Then we'll take a look at the book of Amos, chapter 9, verse 2. Amos 9, verse 2. All right, Kitty, we'll let you take that one. And then Job 26, verse 5. That'll be the last one for now. Job 26, verse 5. All right, Doug. Let's go back to Revelation chapter 20, verse 13. Okay, now if you're just reading this passage, I think what you probably would conclude from it would be, okay, this is the end of time, and wherever people are, the eternal parts of people, you know, the bodies of people, they're going to be given up at the end of time. Okay, no problem with that. That would seem to make sense. The one thing, though, that as I look at this verse in view of today's discussion is, he says, look carefully at that again, 20 verse 13. He says, the sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead that were in it. When you look at that, it almost sounds a little bit like they're in the same location, doesn't it? The same spot that is both associated with the earth. the sea, gave up the, and then you've also got Hades. It to me almost seems like you're in the same general vicinity, the same proximity and so forth. So again, that may not be the most convincing passage in the world, but at least John mentions both places in the same breath. And that would be consistent with what we've talked about thus far. In addition to this, let's see what Paul has to say in Philippians chapter 2, verse 10. Here's another passage where if you just read it, you might just buzz right over all that's said there. But when you start thinking of it in terms of Hades, you have to kind of sit back and scratch the head a little bit. Philippians 2:10.
That in the name of Jesus, every knee would bow, for those in heaven, those on earth, and those under the earth.
Huh. How many places does he mention there?
Three.
Bow the name of Jesus where? If you are in heaven, we'll just use up for that. In heaven, where? On the earth, and then where? Under the earth. Well, is there literally anything under the earth? Yeah. That would, when you start thinking under the earth, well, what does that mean? Well, maybe if you start looking at it from the Hadean realm, you're thinking maybe those layers that we talked about before. And again, I can't prove that conclusively, but there sure seems to be a lot of information in the Bible about Sheol slash Hades and a lot of references to the earth. Now, somebody says, well, you know, that was just Paul's figurative description. He was trying to be very inclusive and use that language to show how expansive Jesus' name is. Okay. But before I accepted that conclusion, I might ask this question. Is that idea found anywhere else in the New Testament? And is that idea expressed by any other New Testament writer? Well, let's answer that question by heading over to our next passage, Revelation chapter 5, verse 3.
And no man in heaven, nor in earth, neither under the earth, was able to open the book, neither to look thereon.
Okay. Paul's not the only one to use this idea in heaven, on the earth, or under the earth. John, Revelation chapter 5, verse 3, also uses that same description. And when you start putting this together with all the other items that we looked about or looked at last week, you really have to start wondering a little bit, can we possibly locate where Hades is? Let's go back to the Old Testament, Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 22. Now, this passage expresses God's anger against the people of Israel. And I want to point out that this passage is highly figurative. And yet, even with highly figurative passages in the Bible, when we have figurative language, is that information always going to be true? God's not going to lie, even when he's using hyperbolic or figurative language. So let's take a look at that. Deuteronomy chapter 32, seeing what we find in verse 22. Okay, some translations would say Sheol there, that Old Testament word. Oh, okay, so we want to make sure that we point that out. But you have there the idea of, once again, the earth, Sheol, burning. And that sounds a little bit like Revelation chapter 20, verse 13. The Sheol, the sea, gave up the dead that were in it. So, as I said, none of these passages individually would certainly be conclusive, but as you start looking at them, you seem to get a pretty consistent picture. Then you have this unusual passage in the book of Amos, chapter 9, verse 2. Once again, somebody might say, well, that's just figurative language and try to dismiss it. Well, okay, surely it is figurative, but still, why did that figure get used? Amos 9, verse 2, who's got it? All right, Kitty? Okay, King James translation you read from? Okay, here goes back. Here's an illustration that goes back to what we said last week. The King James translation, what's it do with Hades? All right, it translates Hades hell. And here you have an illustration of that in the Old Testament as well. It should be Sheol. But the King James decided to render it hell. And back in the 1600s, people understood that hell could mean hell in the sense of Gehenna. That would be the end of time hell, the place where people will go after Jesus returns. Or back in 1611, they knew enough about the language to realize that that word that's translated hell could mean Sheol or Hades. They had to look at the passage and figure out what was what. So read Hades there instead of hell, if you would. Kitty, read it. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Amos 9:2.
They dig into Hades.
All right, there it is. They dig where? Into Hades. Where do we dig?
Down.
We dig down. We dig down into the earth. So once again, that's a very unusual passage. You know, we obviously can't dig. We know we can dig down so far, but after that you start having some great issues with heat. Then you've got Job 26, verse 5. Once again, this may have been the earliest book that was written, but Job was still thinking about Sheol or Hades at times. 26, 5.
Verse 6 also discusses the Sheol.
Okay.
They that are in the seas tremble beneath the waters and the inhabitants thereof.
Okay. They, read it one more time.
They that are deceased tremble beneath the waters and the inhabitants.
Okay. The people who are deceased, what happens at death? Body separates from the eternal part of man. They that are deceased are where? Are below the waters. Well, wouldn't that also be consistent with inside the earth? It would. So you start looking at a lot of different passages in a lot of different ways, and they all seem to point to the same general conclusion. Now, we know from Revelation chapter 20, verse 13, we read that earlier, that when the end of time comes, Hades is going to be giving up the dead. It is only a temporary holding place, just as other parts of the earth are only a temporary holding spot for people. And when we start looking at the Hadean realm, we have some illustrations of it. The greatest one perhaps being what we find back in Luke chapter 16, verses 22 through 31. We've alluded to that passage some. I want to go back and read it. And then we'll turn over to the book of 1 Samuel, chapter 28 as a class, and look at some of the things that took place after Samuel left this life and Samuel's interaction with Saul. Luke chapter 16, starting with verse 22 and reading down through verse 31. And it came to pass when the beggar died, and we've talked about what death is, that he was carried away by angels into Abraham's bosom. And the rich man also died and was buried. And in Hades, once again, if you have the King James, you'll, I think, see that translated hell. But it's Hades, it's the realm of the dead. He lifted up his eyes, being in torments, and seeth Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water, and cool my tongue, for I am in anguish in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that thou in thy lifetime receivest good things, and Lazarus in like manner evil things. But now here he is comforted, and thou art in anguish. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, that they that would pass from thence to you may not be able, and that none may cross over from thence to us. And then, of course, he says, I want you to send back Lazarus to my father's house. I have five brethren, that he may testify unto them. Abraham said, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. The rich man said, that's not going to work. They need somebody from the dead. And then, of course, Abraham replies, if they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded if one rise from the dead. Now, you want to be careful as far as taking this information and applying it too literally. For example, the Bible says he lifted up his eyes. I don't know that you'd want to take that word eye and translate that in the sense that we think of eye in a physical sense, because we're dealing with a spiritual realm. Then there's some other things that are very interesting to me. If we come back to our board, let's see, I've got some notes on this that's in my head, but I'm not sure I'm going to give you the right information as far as the dimensions. Yeah, 30 and 1800. Okay, if we come back to our board. Here we are. We're on the crust of the earth. Science tells us that it's about 30 miles down before you start getting to the mantle. And then that mantle is 1,800 miles down. And then after 1,800 miles, then you start getting into the inner and the outer core. Now, when you start thinking about that, good for you, Jeff. Thank you very much. Let's just, now that the board's been found, see if we can draw this out a little bit better. Okay, let's draw our core. For the sake of illustration, like I say, we could be very wrong about this. I could be completely off. But we're going to, for the sake of simplicity, what we know about science and what we've just read from Luke chapter 16, here's the core. Form it. Okay? Then based on Luke chapter 16, what would we have as far as that next ring inside of here?
The Gulf.
That would be the Gulf. And then we move out a little bit. And what do we have in this area?
Hades.
We've got what?
Abraham's bosom.
All right, we've got Hades, and this is all Hades, but we've got Abraham's bosom. Comfort.
Paradise.
The place where Jesus went, Acts chapter 2. And then for that next outer ring, what do we have? All right, this is home for us. That's the crust. All right, now if you start thinking about that, you know, 30 miles down, 1,800 miles down, and then you're going even further. If you're going to have a conversation with somebody and you're talking about communicating over a 1,000-mile distance, you better have email. You better have a really good telephone, right? What about seeing somebody that's over 1,000 miles away? Well, I mean, to us, that just doesn't work. So exactly how, if it is indeed, we're talking about the inner parts of the earth, and at least that's possible in my mind, somebody says, well, how do you explain that? Here would be an example of where we would try to put some spiritual information in, or some physical information into a spiritual realm, and that doesn't work. And that was kind of Paul's point to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. They said, well, how is this going to work? And Paul said, the body is sown in corruption, it's raised in incorruption. It's sown a fleshly body, and it's raised a spiritual body. So it kind of goes back to the old saying, you can't mix apples and oranges. And that's true when it comes to the physical and the spiritual realm. So if that is what is taking place there, the distance, at least for me, I just can't quite wrap my head around that. And you have some other things, too, based on what we know, as far as that layer, that if this is correct, Abraham's bosom, there's supposedly rock in there and some other things. This might interest you. There was, and some people said that this was debunked. I don't know that it has been fully debunked, but you can Google, if you want, hollow earth theory, H-O-L-L-O-W, just like Kentucky has the hollow, a hollow earth theory. And there has been, at different times, some people, even now, some pretty smart people, who believe that there are actually some hollow parts of the inner part of the earth. Now, I can't say whether that's true or not. I just don't have the science background and certainly not the technology. But there's likely a lot about that part of our world that we simply don't know, and it's very, very interesting. But whether it is in the inner part of the world, whether it is located somewhere else, you do have this information about Hades in Luke chapter 16. And as you look at it, you do get some hints, and you see these too in 1 Samuel chapter 28. There seems to be communication of some sort in the afterlife. There also seems to be some form of recognition. You have, for example, Abraham. He's able to be recognized. And exactly how that was done, I don't know. Was it completely verbal? Was there, to put it in human terms again, physical terms, was there something, some kind of form that could be seen? The Bible doesn't answer those questions. But it does indicate that there was some kind of recognition and some kind of ability to communicate. So we're left with some unanswered questions, but at least the Bible does give us a few glimpses in that area. At least, yes. Now, maybe that detail is given for us. You go back to illustrations, and when God uses an illustration, it's not going to be based on something that's false. So I'm a little hesitant for somebody to say, well, you know, that's just figurative language. If it actually is a conversation that had taken place among people, and that's how I understand Luke chapter 16, you have to understand that, at least as a request for some kind of aid or water. But, you know, for us, that would make perfect sense. So, I mean, when you think of heat, the one thing that comes to mind is, if you can't douse it, at least give you some kind of liquid, in this case, water. But yeah, we lay it behind when we die, enter into the spirit realm, and then when In 1 Corinthians 15, Paul gave that discussion with Corinthians. The body at that time is transformed into that spiritual, eternal, glorious body.
So, what's the body between? I mean, it says we return to dust. I understand that.
Yeah.
But yet, if our body transforms,
yeah,
is our body resurrected again and then transformed?
That's my understanding of it. As you look at John 5:28-29, Solomon describes that they that sleep in the dust of the earth shall be raised, some to the resurrection of life, some to the resurrection of judgment. What happens? Some people have suggested that in the afterlife, there is no form in the sense that we think of it now. But to me, that's kind of difficult to imagine. Everything that we understand about existence says that there is some kind of form. Now, that may not be a physical form as we currently think of it. That would seem to be at odds with what you find in John 5:28-29. But there still seems to be the ability to communicate. We'll take a look at 2 Corinthians chapter 12 a little later as well. And there Paul talks about he entered into the third heaven. He said he heard things that were unspeakable. So you've got communication going on there. So unless you just have, and this is, again, trying to put spiritual things into physical terms or physical terms into spiritual things, unless you've got just invisible voices running around, which that doesn't seem to be anything that makes sense, there would seem to be some kind of form in the afterlife. What's a soul look like? We don't know. But if we could, I don't know exactly how to make the point, but there might be, especially if we... Okay, let's look at it this way. We believe that angels exist, don't we? Okay. Could we have some angels in the assembly this morning, listening to Brad try to work his way out of this hole? Very possibly. All right, so there is some kind of form there, but it's not visible to us. Could that same thing be true internally of the Spirit? That if you had the right glasses, so to speak, you had the right eyesight, you could actually see that, but in the present form, we can't. So it may be, this is just wild speculation on my part, but it could be that what is inside of us, that there is that spirit, that there is a form to that. And when that leaves the body, that form continues. But it's unlike anything right now that we can see with our natural senses. And it's anything that, you know, we can't process right now, but it does exist. So there may not be situation where, you know, we're going to inherit some kind of temporary body, but what's already inside of us goes into that realm, and then it's recognizable somehow in that realm. You have to think, here's an example of that. Remember Jesus, the disciples, this would be another question if I were thinking through this on my own, but I'll mention this to you as well in case a thought was crossing your mind. Jesus, the disciples are in a locked room. How does Jesus get into that room? The door is locked. All right, he just goes through the door. In that spirit form, he could pass through a physical object. So somebody says, well, you know, if you've got this going on in the Hadean realm, if indeed you do have that taking place in the earth, could you pass through rock, so to speak? If you can pass through a door, I would think that you could pass through rock. So again, there are a lot of interesting things that come up from this and some items to consider. Anybody else before we head over to 1 Samuel? Gary or Tehillah, I'm not sure which. Okay.
That's me.
Yes, and that's why I say you want to be a little bit careful with Luke chapter 16. We've got true information, but if you start pressing the details, that people actually have eyes and that they're communicating over a distance of 1,800 miles and so forth, be careful about that. Just try to use a very balanced approach there.
And then when you read what's written, when he says there's a gulf that you can't pass from one side to the other, you can't pass, so we just don't question it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lead wall or something, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, whatever that is. Okay, let's go back and see what took place with Samuel and Saul. 1 Samuel chapter 28. We'll start with verse 6. And we'll not read every verse there, but we'll just pick up the highlights. All right, verse 6, 1 Samuel 28. And when Saul inquired of Jehovah, Jehovah answered him, not neither by dreams, nor by the Urim, nor by the prophets. Then down in verse 8, the text there, we start dealing with the woman at Endor. Saul disguised himself and put on raiment and went. Two men with him, and they came to the woman of my night and said, "Divine unto me, I pray thee, by the familiar spirit, and bring up whomsoever I shall name unto thee." Then as we move down to verse 15, he wants to communicate with Samuel. And Samuel said to Saul. Now, I know there's some people who look at this account. You know, Samuel has died off. He's down in the Hadean realm. And I know there's some people who have the idea that Saul did not actually communicate with Samuel. That to me is problematic, though, because the Bible says that these two guys, when the Bible says Samuel talked to Saul or Saul talked to Samuel, that seems pretty definitive to me. So I accept the text as written. Samuel said to Saul, "Why hast thou disquieted me?" And notice that, "to bring me up." Well, that's fascinating. Where's Saul? The crest of the earth. Well, if it's true that you have Hades located in the earth, that would make perfect sense, wouldn't it? Bring me up. So once again, I don't want to stake my life in this. I don't want to stake anything on this. But when you start looking at the Bible passages which talk about Hades, you do get this consistent picture, which is interesting. Then you also want to, I think, conclude from this that Hades, you do have communication here. I would not refer to it as a silent place because of what we have in Luke chapter 16 and here too. Then you have what we mentioned earlier as far as the Corinthian letter, 2 Corinthians chapter 12. What Paul said about verses 3 and 4 in this chapter. And once again, I believe that this has to be understood as the Hadean realm, and I'll give you a reason for that. Paul talks about someone, a lot of people, including me, believe that he refers to himself, but they're not. There are some people who don't believe that. But Paul talks about visions and revelations of the Lord in 2 Corinthians 12:1. And then he says, "I know a man in Christ." So this was someone who was a Christian, whether you believe it was Paul or somebody else, it really doesn't matter. He says, 14 years ago, "whether in the body I know not, or whether out of the body I know not, but God knows. And this person was caught up even unto the third heaven. And I know such a man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I know not, God knoweth. How that he was caught up into paradise," well, we've seen that idea with Jesus, Acts 2 and Luke chapter 23, verse 43. He was caught up there into paradise, and what happened to him? He heard unspeakable words which are not lawful for a man to utter. Now, what kind of conversation was taking place in the Hadean realm? I don't know. Why would those words be unlawful to utter? I don't know. But whatever takes place there, it definitely seems to be a good bit different than what you have taking place up here on the crust. And even if you locate Hades somewhere else, which is perfectly fine, that still seems to be true. You might be able to tie into this. Remember the Transfiguration? You've got some Old Testament characters. They show up and they begin conversing with Jesus. Isn't that interesting? They'd been out of the picture for a long time. And the Lord didn't say, "You guys need 6 months of sermons to understand what's going on." It seems like they sort of have already kind of pieced things together a little bit. So I wonder a little bit about the conversations that are taking place in the Hadean realm. It sounds like, at least for the righteous, there may be some spiritual conversations rather than just, "Hey, do you like your house of gold?" I don't think that's what we're dealing with as far as what happens when people leave this life and enter into the afterlife.
Verse 2 on that says he was caught up into the third heaven. And then it says he was caught up into paradise in verse 4. So mm-hmm. Where's the third heaven?
Okay. For a long time, I believed that the third heaven was heaven. I don't believe that anymore. I think when you look at that, a lot of people, well, he talks about the third heaven, that must be the final heaven. But if I say, this is my second dog, you might conclude that I don't have a third. But would that conclusion necessarily be accurate? No. Or this is my second child. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that you've stopped with two. You might have three, you might have ten. And yet for a long time, I sort of read 2 Corinthians 12 that way, that when it says the third heaven. But here would be what I would propose. You have the first heaven where the birds fly. Second heaven would be where?
Space.
Outer space. Third heaven would be what?
Hell.
No.
Paradise.
Slash Hades. Fourth heaven would be where? The eternal heaven.
Third heaven would be
Hades. The positive side of Hades. First heaven, where the birds fly. Second heaven, outer space. The third heaven, the paradise side of Hades. Heaven number four, the eternal heaven.
So how do you equate the third heaven with this
okay.
paradise?
The right big circle?
It would be Abraham's bosom. We've got, okay, let's, all right, let's work backwards. Heaven four, heaven with God, eternity. Heaven,
space.
Heaven three. No. Hades, the positive side. Heaven two,
space.
Heaven one,
sky.
So, third heaven and Hades are the same, even though we're saying our paradise is the same, even though we're saying.
It's directionally inconsistent. Clock up.
Yeah.
Red versus going down.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't have, as of this moment, a good answer to that. Caught up, taken to, but directionally, yes. I think that you would have some explaining to do on that one. And I don't have a real good. Caught up, I think one answer there might be, and I'd have to look at the Greek word for sure, but caught up could be simply taken. And if it's taken, then the direction would become meaningless. But until I can look at that word and verify that. But if a direction is involved, then once again, I don't have an answer for that. But if we're dealing with just taken, then I think that eliminates any issue.
Verse 2 and 4 both say, I can up in.
Okay. I will look at that and get an answer back to the class. So, anybody else? Doug?
That would sir be up from where you were talking about.
I'd welcome any help, but I'm thinking that's going to be really stretching it. So I do want to look at that word and see if that helps me a little bit, but thank you.
With Saul and Samuel's conversation, if he said, why do you bring me up and disquiet me, do you think he was speaking possibly that as he was using his physical body that remains underground as why are you bringing me up? And, you know, the body is laying there peacefully. Obviously, there's nothing in it, but if the body is laying there peacefully, he said, why are you bringing me up?
Let's go back to 1 Samuel 28 and see if there's anything in there that we can pull out which would point us to a visible representation of Samuel. Okay, we know from verse 11 that Saul says, bring me up Samuel. Verse 11 says, when the woman saw Samuel.
She grew
out
like a terrified
bird. Yeah. So she would have been in that day and time. Would you understand the language to mean when she saw something and what she saw, she perceived to be Samuel? Or did what she see look enough like Samuel where she was able to say, this is the man? Just a straightforward reading of the text would indicate to me that when it says she saw Samuel, that she was able to recognize him somehow. And that is also consistent with Luke chapter 16. Again, how that would work in the afterlife and, you know, what there may be in us that departs that might allow us to be recognized, I don't know. I mean, that's just information that God has not chosen to reveal. And I don't think that you're going to find very much on that as you study about Hades in the afterlife. But that is the statement in the text here.
I'm just saying about if Hades actually isn't under the surface of the earth, maybe it's over the surface of the earth. If someone says, why do you bring me up, even though technically he's literally coming down, maybe we're just talking about speaking.
Yeah, and like I say, Hades may not be in the center of the earth. But at least there are some passages which sort of point that way. But wherever it is, it doesn't matter, because that's where people are going to be held to the end of time, and then it's going to be destroyed. But it's interesting to at least run the passages and see all the verses that do at least sort of generally point in that direction. Carol?
Verse 14, Saul asked the woman, what is his form? He asked her to describe him. And she said, he is an old man. An old man is coming up. He is wrapped with a robe.
Yeah.
That's what this verse says.
Yeah. You've got a similar thing in the ESV. Now, that takes us back to what we're talking about with Gary. Was she able to just see that form and conclude, well, that's got to be him? Or was there something that was, I mean, she had recognized the prophet, maybe recognized the robe and so forth. Was this maybe a special circumstance by God? There are a lot of unanswered questions that we have in the text.
Well, when she saw the form, then she knew she was talking to Paul.
Yes.
So she knew two things at once.
Yes.
She figured it out.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there was enough there to say, this is him. Now, whether or not...
So now you're you.
Yes. Now, she had seen him on the street, seen that form in the street. Could she have concluded that it was Samuel? You know, I don't know. Yes. Yeah, and like I say, there's... You're,
she did say, I see a God coming up.
Yeah.
In verse 13, she says, I see a God coming up out of the earth. And then she says, an old
okay.
man covered in a robe. And then Saul perceived that it was
Samuel. Doug, and then we'll take Gloris. Well, there is that little lesson, too, that's important.
When you look at all that, technically it's not going to matter.
Correct.
It's not going to be a big deal. But you will sometimes deal with people who believe if you're cremated, then you can't be raised from the dead. And so then now you're going to have to say, well, all the people that were in fires that burned to death aren't going to be able to raise from the dead. So you will have discussions with individuals. And even members of the church that believe if you're cremated that you will not be able to rise from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense because we're coming in another body and the other body is dust anyway.
Yeah. Remember, death is not cessation, it is a separation. And once that cessation or once that separation has occurred, that cessation, which hasn't taken place, the eternal part of man is in another place. What happens to that body? It's going to decompose anyway, given enough time. So whatever happens to that body, the spirit has already been sealed in the Hadean realm. Death occurs when the body and the spirit separate. And by the time somebody figures out funeral arrangements, and by the time the cremation has occurred, that spirit has already been in Hades for maybe a day or maybe a week, at least probably a few days. And there's nothing that can be done to the body that's going to jeopardize the status of that eternal spirit. Dolores?
Just the same thing that people have been thinking about.
Hades is for the righteous, and even for the unrighteous, it is a precursor of what eternity is going to be like. The righteous are comforted, Luke chapter 16. 1 Samuel 28 also suggests to me that there is some degree of glorification. Not what it's going to be in eternity, but there is a little bit of a taste of that. And then for the unsaved, of course, hell is going to be at least as bad, maybe worse. The other quick passage that I want to give you is John chapter 3, verse 13. We've looked at this a few times over the years, but it's also, I believe, important for this discussion. John wrote his book several years after Jesus had gone back to heaven, and John said, no one has ascended into heaven. Then he qualified that a little bit, except the one who came down, and that would be Jesus. So several years after the resurrection, some people have the idea that Hades still exists. But based on Ephesians chapter 4, some people think that Jesus took the righteous people to heaven. And the paradise section of Hades is no longer occupied by anybody. Well, I don't think that you can square that with John 3, verse 13. Because John says, way after the resurrection, nobody has ascended to heaven except Jesus.